welcome to Beyond Your Hangover with Ryan Peterson, Dr. Bobby, and me, Garrett. So, what do we got to talk about today, fellas?
Well, maybe we should explain why we're doing this show, what the point of it is, why we thought of it, and why we think we can help people.
Basically, I think what we all talked about and how it all came about was me being sober for, almost 4 years, and then Ryan discussed it, and then we got Bobby involved, and we all just decided to talk about sobriety, and then beyond.
Right?
You know, and try to help people in different ways.
I think with all our backgrounds and stuff, Bobby is a doctor. He's not a medical doctor, but a doctor of composition, stats guy, our stats and information and news guy, I think that falls into place. And you try to keep sober, and we had about that, and then I knew about Garrett's situation. You know, he's been sober for 4 years, gone through some things that he's dealing with, and he can talk about that as he would like. I'm a retired police officer, so I've kind of been on the other side of things, but always kind of took a sober lifestyle, and so we kind of realized that's the commonality between the three of us. We all haven't known each other real long, but I think we all kind of clicked when we met each other, and so this seems like a good thing to do. I think we could help a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, Garrett and I remember. Garrett and I are classmates.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm coming at it from the other side. I've known Bobby a little while, but just been talking to Garrett for about 6 months to a year, I guess, now. And we just met earlier in the week. For the first time.
Face to face.
So, Bobby, why don't you give us some stats here? What can we start off with? Some new news.
I mean, we can start with what we were talking about just a minute ago before. I don't think this, I don't know how this showed up as news, but it did. All right. So CNN Health says alcohol's healthy halo dims as a study finds drinking may be harmful for older adults, even at low levels. How is this news? Right? Is alcohol not, is there a certain age that alcohol is not dangerous? That it won't hurt you, that it doesn't do anything nasty? Because I remember learning it as, no, there is no age that doesn't suck. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. In that sense.
Is the article saying anything like just about moderation or something? Like a half a glass of wine a day or something? Or
Hopefully they do give a definition as to how they consider those. Because, I mean, moderation for one is not moderation for all.
Sure, sure.
So the Gallup poll, right, 45% of all Americans say that having one or two alcoholic drinks a day is bad for a person's health. Younger adults, 65%. And then as you get older, you get into the 35 to 54 group. They come in at 37%. And then 39% is adults 55 or older. They do mention mocktails and the rise of non-alcoholic drinks mm-hmm. for younger adults here. So that's something interesting. We were talking about that before. Here's what's making it different. This time, there's a 10 percentage point increase in adults 55 and older who reported drinking.
So it's saying it's saying no alcohol at all after 54?
Pretty much.
Mid-50s generally? Yeah.
I think it was 55.
55.
55? Okay.
55 or older is the last group they were considering.
Okay. Day before 55th birthday, you better drink up. The day you turn 21 till the day before you turn 55, you're good. And then beyond that.
CNN had a slow news day. Yeah. They had that for an article.
apparently.
Already proven facts that it's not good to drink a lot. Holy bucket. Thank you, CNN. No right? idea.
I thought this was The Onion for a moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or some parody news thing, you know?
Tabloid.
Well,
yeah.
No. If it was a tabloid, then they would have to add aliens into it. Or
of course.
Oh, yeah. Elk. Drinking among aliens.
Drinking with aliens, yeah. And yeah. After or before the abduction.
Yeah. Don't want to talk about after the abduction.
Right. I agree, Garrett. I think it's just a slow news day.
Well, I think that guy got fired.
Well, everybody's picking up on it. I can see it. It's on the New York Times. It's on US News and World Report today.
You know, maybe we should stress too that we're three guys in Wisconsin. It is America's drinking capital. basically, I mean, you know, love our beer so much we named our baseball team the Brewers. It's tough, you know, just peer pressure all over. But I think especially in Wisconsin, nobody really does anything without having alcohol involved. You know, whether it's a background, a backyard barbecue or grill, or sitting talking and shooting the breeze or whatever. It's just, you know, somebody's going to hand you a beer. Have to say no.
You know, you said just say no, right? That's it. That was the slogan of the DARE program a long time ago, right?
The Nancy Reagan thing.
Yeah. Nancy Reagan and her crusade, the war on drugs, right? Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't go to an arcade anywhere and not see the presidential seal with that slogan at the bottom that said, "Winners don't use drugs." I mean, to me, clearly I'm not the audience for this, right? For that, because I don't do drugs. I don't do alcohol. I don't do any of those things. To me, again, I'm walking around going, "Well, no kidding. Who's that for?"
Yeah, I think at the time I was probably, well, when Reagan was president, until I was 10, 9, I guess. So it might have been a little bit aimed at me then as a Gen Xer. But yeah, I just didn't, I guess it didn't stop me from drinking. I didn't really think of it. I thought that still whether I want to or not. You know, I just never took it up. And yeah, like Bobby, I've drank, you know, I never acquired a taste for alcohol. I just never, that's just never the first thing I ever thought about.
One of the rare few. I have a buddy that I grew up with that DJed with me. And I don't know, he was a bigger guy, but like when he was at the bar, he would ask the bartender for like a, not a mug, but like a pitcher of just shots.
Oh,
and that's all he'd drink all night, and he would not get drunk.
But
like, I don't know how that was possible, but he would not get drunk. Mm. Yeah, he's like, yeah, that's all. I just need that one drink, and I'll be good. Okay.
one drink? One pitcher. That's a pitcher.
Pitcher. In terms of health, then, is that good or bad?
I mean, maybe no liver. I have no idea.
Well, yeah. Is it a liver issue or a strong liver?
I couldn't understand it because I was like, I would have died if that happened because that's a lot of alcohol, sir.
Well, yeah. Apparently he's conditioned. You know, he's been doing that for a while.
Yeah, but he stopped a long time ago, but that was when we were in our 20s, so 20 years ago. So, it was insane. I could not.
Well, that's interesting too, because you know, through my police career, a lot of people would say, "Well, how many drinks does it take me to get to a 0.08 or 0.10?" And that's you can't. There's not a hard and fast rule for everybody. Your friend who might have been 300 pounds and 6 foot five, you know, it's going to take him longer than the 98 pound girl, you know, who just turned 21 and. One of the drunkest people I ever saw was a 98 pound girl on her birthday. We got called because she was screaming on her way up her stairs after being out that night. We asked her how much she had to drink. And of course she said two, but we gave her the breath test and she was about a 0.04. I mean, but she'd never drank before in her life. Couldn't tolerate it. Couldn't handle it. I mean, she was the drunkest acting person I think I ever saw in my life. She didn't know her name. Oof. 21st birthday and the first time drinking a 0.04. She couldn't tell me her name. So, but yeah, a 300 pound guy, it's going to be different. You know, and she probably did have two.
With 98 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't take much to fly away in the wind.
Yeah. Yeah, but and conditioned your physique has something to do with that too. So there's not a hard and fast rule of how many drinks you're going to have, and it's going to make you feel the effects of being intoxicated.
Yep, absolutely.
Like when you are drunk, you never think you're drunk.
No,
you know, you feel usually you feel fine to yourself, but other people, of course,
stand up.
Yeah, right. Until you get off the bar stool.
Yeah.
I suppose that's the revelation there when you can say, "Okay, I'm drunk."
Yep.
But it's interesting that the of most of the people that I arrested for drunk driving, you know, 75% of them either weren't driving or weren't drunk, you know, uh-huh. in their minds, yeah. I wasn't driving. Yeah. I just pulled you out of the car and, you know, I wasn't drinking either. Well, you're a 0.25.
Yeah.
It does some crazy things to the brain.
Oh yeah. Everything does.
I'm sure those are stats we could probably look up and also should have those at the ready maybe next time. Things that alcohol does to the brain, the effects that, you know, we can all imagine. I guess we've all drank, but I suppose that's the tough part is to know when to stop.
I don't know. The one buddy says that he can do it anytime. I said, but if you're sitting there for 2 hours and you have six drinks, I mean, that's probably not a good idea because they say like what, an hour a drink or something like that you should not have mm-hmm. anything because of the absorption rate or whatever. But I just don't understand the fact that he thinks it's okay. Well, I'll be fine. Okay. Yep. I've said that plenty of times when I was younger and it got me into crappy situations. So, no. Yeah.
Oof. You know, I wonder if this would be a good time. Garrett, you've got the email address you made. If, you know, if anybody watching or listening kind of wants to share their story or something, maybe email you.
Oh, yeah.
Or any of us, I suppose, but
basically it's beyondyourhangover.com and yeah, you can email and we'll answer your questions and hopefully we give you the right answers or what we think is the right answer.
Yeah. Yeah. So Garrett at beyondyourhangover.com. Oh, beyondyourhangover@gmail.com.
I got a few things on I guess relapse stats or whatever for drinking. If you want to hear some of those.
Yeah, go ahead.
Basically this is from urbanrecovery.com and they just got a few pointers here. It says relapse rates for alcohol addiction hover around 40 to 60%, which is similar to the relapse rates for other chronic diseases like asthma and hypertension. The primary trigger, approximately 65% of individuals in recovery report the stress as primary trigger for relapse. Number three, the risk of relapse decreases as the length of sobriety increases. After 1 year of sobriety, the relapse rate drops to around 50%, and after 5 years, the rate falls to 15%. Hmm. So kind of interesting stuff.
Yeah. I suppose the longer you're sober, you probably pick up more habits that keep you sober.
Busy mind, busy hands. You know, so yeah. If you keep your mind busy, your hands are busy. So
yeah.
That way you don't think about drinking or doing drugs or anything like that.
Let's go. Yeah.
Let's see here. Social support. Individuals with strong social support networks are less likely to relapse. In fact, 40% of individuals in recovery report that having a support network was vital to their success. So basically a good surrounding. Unemployed individuals are more likely to relapse with a relapse rate of 65% compared to 45% for those who are employed. So basically the same stats as you know, busy hands, busy minds. If you got a job... Sure. You ain't going to think about drinking all the time.
Sure.
Then we have...
Makes complete sense.
AA. Yep.
And there's probably AA a support meetings. Network for you too, right at work.
There you go. Boom, boom. Yeah. And then AA meetings. Studies have shown that individuals who attend AA meetings regularly are more likely to maintain sobriety with a 60% reduction rate in risk of relapse.
Well, again, I think that's the support. You know, that's, yep. I didn't know how important that is, actually. I, you need friends, you need to go to those meetings, or I suppose anything you can latch on to.
Main thing is, as learning as a recovery coach was when you talk to people that are trying to get recovery, you got to ask what their, you know, what their purpose is or what they're there for, and then kind of feel them out and basically feel if AA is right for them, because the majority that I found... AAs are more religion driven. And honestly, I wasn't part of that. I did it on my own. And then with support of friends that were sober, that helped. And then I made a group, which even helped more because it occupied my mind from drinking. And actually it was amazing. So basically you find what works for you and you move forward with it and hopefully you maintain your sobriety the best you can.
Well, you got to mention the name of your group now. It's a Facebook group, right?
Oh yeah. It's Growing Sober. I have a big sticker on top that says Sober Proud.
The Growing Sober on Facebook. I'm a member of that. You post some stats once in a while. And as we're finding out, yeah, any support, I guess, that you can find, even if it's a small group, you're just getting the group up and running. But, you know, all the more the merrier, like you said. Maybe you can find somebody there who you click with, and they can help you through it. You need family. You need, you know, coworkers, whatever it takes.
Yep, absolutely. 100%. Your surroundings are what's going to help you. If you stay around the same people, it's going to drag you down the same way. Got to change your surroundings.
Aren't too many bars like Cheers where
everybody knows your name.
Everybody knows your name, and you go to every day after work and never get drunk. It doesn't work like that.
The good old days.
Well, you got to remember, though, for shows like Cheers, that's not actually alcohol that they're drinking, obviously.
Oh, well.
You know, drinking water instead of vodka. They're drinking orange juice.
Know about the beer, though.
Fermented apple juice.
Norman Cliff.
I'm sure if you get a look there. But, you know, funny you mentioned that. I've been to the Cheers bars in San Francisco. If you've ever been, they have it's a tourist attraction. They call it the Cheers Walk. You start at one of the Cheers bars, because there's two of them. In San Francisco, there's two of them. So the way it works is all the exterior shots that you saw in the show, right? That's the original Cheers bar. So that's where one of the points is on the tour. And then the other Cheers bar is a replica of the inside from the show. Because believe it or not, the actual Cheers bar is nothing like the TV show.
Well, yeah, it was the Bull and Finch, I think, wasn't it, in Boston? Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So they make it a walk-in tour. You pick one, you go to the other.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah, for
it's really cool, because for you got to remember, for me, I was a little young for Cheers when it was on TV. But well, I say I was a little young. I never understood the appeal of the show until I was way a little older. Why would you want to watch a show about a bar?
It was the camaraderie. It was the interactions between the characters. Bright, colorful characters.
No. I'm at the time, I would have been like 10. I don't have to worry about nothing. I don't do work. I go to school. I try to get good grades. I would try to do gym class. We called it phys ed, I suppose. You know, those kinds of things. And so I'm like, why would I want to watch a show about a bunch of people who drink beer and show up at the bar all the time? And it's the same people every time.
It's the support group.
Yeah, there you go. The working man support group.
Well, that's another thing. To each their own. You know, some people will, you have things to watch. Bobby, obviously you studied. You know, some people got to pick up that drink.
Yeah. Well, people are busy lifting a mug. Yeah. I was lifting a book.
Yeah, I remember my dad saying, my dad was a smoker for many, many years and a drinker for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just as of about 75 was the first time he really ever got in trouble for his drinking. Mm-hmm. Got pulled over and arrested for drunk driving. But I remember when he was trying to quit smoking, this was several years ago, but he said he got so used to in the morning reading the paper and having a cigarette. It just, they went hand in hand, and having a cup of coffee, just hand in hand. And when he tried to stop, it was really something missing. He just drawing on that cigarette. He didn't even think about it. It was just something he did. And I suppose drinking is the same. You get done with work, you want to take the edge off. Before you go to bed, you go to the bar, and pretty soon you said, well, I can, one more will be fine. One more.
Yeah.
You know, I can stop anytime I want to. If you say that, you know, when, that's one of the quotes that you got to realize yourself. I might be in trouble now that I've just said those words. I might be starting a denial in your head. You know, it's hard to admit you got a denial, I think, but those are one of the phrases that people say.
Yep. Basically, mind over matter is a lot to do with habit. Smoking is a habit. And just like you said, your dad had to have that every day because it was just habit. Drinking is a habit. So if you start getting into a mold, you know, it's just going to become routine. You know, just like brushing your teeth or combing your hair or, you know, whatever you're doing, putting your clothes on, you know. So it just comes routine, you know. So yeah, if you can, if you change your habit, you can change your ways, you know. So if you start doing something, like when I quit smoking, Christ, probably 15 years ago, I started doing what a lot of people did, was just chew gum. So every time you thought of smoking a cigarette, you just chew gum. So basically over time, you would just forget about smoking and you would just chew gum would just take replacement of it. So yeah.
Did it work? Did it work for you?
Oh yeah. I haven't smoked a cigarette in years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't even crave it anymore.
Well, that's, I think, why a lot of people may gain weight when they quit smoking, is that have to put something to the mouth.
Yep.
And maybe why they encourage models to start smoking. It's something you can put in your mouth that won't make you gain weight. You know, yeah. It's amazing how many models will start smoking to lose weight. It doesn't seem healthy at all. Why would somebody encourage that?
See money.
I'm not very big in the model community, so, I don't know all the secrets. I don't know anybody who's gone through that personally. You know, I should say anymore. I'm not big in the model community anymore. You know, I was
years ago. Back in the day.
When I was up on billboards and doing movies.
Hollywood Ryan. You know, it reminds me of a story that Sarah was telling me. Sarah's my girlfriend, and she said her mom used to be a smoker, right? When she was alive. Only reason that she started smoking in the first place was because at work, smokers got an extra 15-minute break in their day. Like what? Extra 15-minute break on top of the normal 2:15s and a lunch.
The things that motivate us, I guess.
I guess. Now, so here's another one that I can remember, right? And this is the main reason I never smoked cigarettes. My parents were smokers, right? My mom was a smoker, my dad was a smoker, and at the age of 3, I found a still lit cigarette butt on the ground where I was walking around with my mom doing errands and whatever. And so I thought, "Hey, my mom does that. Let me try that." So then I pick it up. Well, my mom saw me taking this drag off this, you know, nasty cigarette on off the ground, and she swatted it out of my hand. Mm-hmm. You know, and said, don't do that. That was my mom's thing. No, don't do that. Mm-hmm. She's a little. She was a 4'11" Japanese Korean woman. So you can picture her doing this to me. And ever since then, I'm like, nope, I don't need it.
Yeah. Well, was it the memory of the cigarette then? Did you start coughing, or was it the memory of mom's wrath?
No, I didn't start coughing. I didn't get a full drag off before my mom's hands came by. Sure, but that wrath, I gotta tell you, man. And people talk about Catholic guilt. No. Forget Catholic guilt. No. You face your mom's wrath. Now that's something.
Well, then it's effective. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've heard a lot of people say that too. At a very young age, dad said, "Here, try a beer." And you know, they're 5 years old, took a sip, and I suppose for some people that'll be a trigger, you know, hey, I like this. Or some people, you know, like I remember doing that. Yeah, I was that young. Dad said, "Have a drink." You know, I saw dad drinking it, and I wanted to be like dad. And oh my God, it was the most disgusting thing I'd ever, you know, I drank milk before that. Maybe orange juice. You know, this stuff was different. So I just always remembered that. Somebody have a beer, you know, growing up or something. No, thank you. I had it in grandma's, you know, dad gave it to me. Not a chance. So I think that's why I never acquired a taste, and I never understood why somebody would want to acquire a taste. You know, so you got to go through it. You got to go through 6 months, a year, whatever, of hating it, and then you like it. That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah,
I don't get it. Same thing with coffee. They say it's acquired taste. I don't get it.
Oh, see, but in your mind, coffee is burnt water.
Burnt water.
That's
what
that's how you described it to me.
Yes, that's what coffee is. And, you know, the first time I drank it, what the hell is this? But on the other side, I think a lot of people will take that first drink and think, okay, this is something that I like. So have some more.
I think it comes back to like your mindset and stuff too. Like I was a social drinker. So that's kind of what I felt that I needed to do when I went out was just to drink, you know, or whatever and get stupid. And so basically the same thing, like I'm saying, like the mindset of everything, like you with your first taste, you put that in your head where this is disgusting. I'm not going to do that again. And you didn't. And you know, I finally had to go down to the low level to actually figure out not to do that anymore and, you know, get your head out of your butt. So, I think, like I said, it's a mindset and, your habits and different things like that, where it's going to, you know, change what you do every day.
Well, I think like how we said in the beginning, you know, we're here in Wisconsin. Beer is associated with everything you do, whether it's family or friends. There's a bar on every corner. You know, there's likely more bars than churches in every little town, you know, but at least as many, whether you're at a baseball game, whether you're at a, you know, that always comes up when they're setting up an event. Can we have beer or not? And, you know, that kind of that irritates me that that's got to be so high on the priority list. To tell you the truth, really? As a non-drinker and never got getting into it, and then going into law enforcement for years, you know, we can talk about the drinking age too. You know, sure you can fight for your country at 18, but the drinking age is 21. And I hear people say, "Well, I can die for my country, but I can't have a beer." My comeback is, why is having a beer that almighty level of achievement? You know, but I can't even have a beer. You know, we know the studies that your brain isn't fully developed to handle beer until around the age of 21. Maybe some people are earlier, maybe some people not quite as much yet. But that's about the age, you know, when your brain turns 21 and completely forms. But that mentality that if you are 18, you can do whatever you want in life, you know, including have a beer. I just don't understand why the all-time pinnacle is, that's the all-time level of achievement is having a beer. You know, why isn't it just going to the military? You know, that should be a high level of achievement for you, an accomplishment. And then at that point, be able to say, I don't have to have a beer to serve my country. You know, maybe when you go with your buddies to the bar or something, have a drink, you know, in moderation. I don't think we're discouraging that, you know, if you feel that that's necessary. But, you know, you got to do it in moderation. You got to know when to stop so you won't end up having a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%. Yeah, I've been on both sides of that avenue, too, with friends in the military. So, then a lot of them back in the day, you could just drink in the base. So they would just, because you wouldn't be able to leave or whatever. So a lot of them would just drink in the base. Mm-hmm. So they just figured that if they can do it there, they should be able to do it anywhere. Well, legalities when you're outside of base. So
sure. Yeah, and I can see that argument for, you know, being 18 and in the military and you know, being treated like an adult, except for drinking. But again, there are people who know more about it than I ever did between 18 and 21. So, you know, those are medical studies that, you know, have been done. They know by now that it has a negative effect between 18 and 21. And that's why it's a negative effect to the point where they have to pass laws. It has been detrimental to people. So. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not you want to say it's the government getting in your business, you know, that's not our kind of show, it's a medical reason for it.
I'll just do a shout out to, if anybody's in ever need of housing, I've been really pushing for, Eau Claire Sober Living. They have two women's houses and we're actually raising funds for, a men's sober house, for shelter for people with, addiction. So, to get back on their feet, and it's basically like a place for them to feel safe and be able to move on with recovery and stuff. So they're really good bunch of people there.
Phone number for that?
It is 1-800-989-3068.
You know, we kind of are winging it, but you know, as we continue, we should have some of those numbers for Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I'll I'll make some banners up or slides or something to get those numbers up for people. What you got, Robbie?
A lot of the things that I'm finding out here, they all emphasize moderation. Don't know your limit, don't do it. I just had this thought, but isn't that a little bit of a catch 22? You have to test your limit to know your limit, right?
Sure. Yeah. Like the commercials for medications on TV, they'll say, if you're allergic to this drug, then don't take it.
Well, how do you know you're allergic if you don't take
exactly.
it? Exactly. Right?
Or you get the point of like, this will cure this, but it'll also give you 10 million side effects. So don't, yeah. but just take this product for this.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The reason they have to give you that long list of side effects is because it's twofold. One is to keep you safe. Because they actually did clinical trials to determine that, and that's what people were reporting happened to them. But the other one is it's so that nobody can come back and sue them.
Popped into my mind too. I've had migraine headaches for years, and I've got the medication that takes care of them just like that. But I was reading the label one day. All I know about it is it cures my migraine. But reading the label actually one day, and it says may cause headache. No. You know, the first time, I don't know if I'd have thought, is this really the drug I want to be taking?
you cure your migraine, but you might get a headache afterwards.
Yeah. It's just going to move it around a little bit or something.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, back there.
It takes care of the right sided headache, but it'll give you a left sided headache. Yeah. So, they got to do another study and make another drug for the left side.
Now, you know, it's funny that you mentioned alcohol or labels, because there is one story that I just saw. This was suggesting, I'll show it to you here, the notion that there should be alcohol labels that are like that give you the same information as a health label on food.
Yep, they've been talking about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nutrition label?
Yeah, like for alcohol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, really? I don't even bother to read the nutrition label on my food.
Well, yeah.
So. Yeah. You know, I don't knock the idea. If you're somebody who already knows what this is and what it's going to do to you, is a sticky label that says, hey, this is going to, hey, this thing might kill you, or hey, this causes a severe hangover, which may include nausea and other nasties, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, clearly it's not going to stop anybody. Just
Yeah. Well, and the thing about it too, I know one of my professors back in college. He's still my friend today. He tells a story about how when he was at Oxford, he saw every pack of cigarettes had this ginormous label on it, like the size of the box. It took up one whole side. And it says smoking kills. That's all it says. It doesn't tell you the other legalese that the Surgeon General warning says on the side of a pack of smokes.
One of the craziest things years ago, I found out that Truth Social, when they did the things with all the commercials for anti-smoking, that was the smoking companies that were doing that. So they were basically negating their own cigarettes. So Marlboro and stuff. Yeah, Marlboro and stuff. They were funding the truth posts.
Well, I think we've all seen those ads from the 30s and 40s, 50s, you know, of doctors recommending a certain brand of cigarette. You know, maybe you can find one of others, you know, encouraged to smoke in their magazines. You know, Dr. So-and-so recommends Pall Malls. So, you know, I'm sure at one time the same thing was done for alcohol. You know, there's still the old wife with a little bit of whiskey on the pacifier will keep a baby from crying.
Yeah.
I that's probably not the most healthy thing to do anymore. We'll hear a lot of mothers say, oh, I did that and it's fine.
And actually, I did find one. It's from your favorite place here, Ryan. It's from History Channel.
I still believe in the History Channel. It's not all history anymore, but
well, sure. I mean, you know, this is the one that they like to.
There we go.
They've been emphasizing.
No these other facts, cigarette can make this statement. What's the statement they're making?
Well, these facts are accepted by eminent medical authorities.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't think I noticed this in the 80s, but I'm on a baseball group and a baseball old baseball picture group, that show, you know, just players from the 20s and 30s and stuff. They're neat pictures. But occasionally they'll show players from, you know, when I was growing up in the 80s. And there's guys like Keith Hernandez sitting in the dugout having a cigarette. You know, all the all the players during a game. And, of course, you know, we know it went on more then than now in the locker room, you know, behind the dugout. But they'd have to crack open their beer there. And you know, so it was just such more commonplace, smoking and drinking in the 80s. I don't think we noticed it as much. And everything in the 80s smelled like smoke. I mean, that I can tell you for sure. And, you know, when they we've all seen the McDonald's ashtrays, haven't you? from the 80s? Yeah, McDonald's had ashtrays right there on the table.
Yeah.
I think that's what we started with is we're three guys in Wisconsin trying not to drink, and it's so accepted. You know, so accepted and encouraged that you know, you have a drink of beer at any kind of social event. It's tough. And, you know, hopefully shows like this then will, you know, kind of encourage people. There's the email address at the bottom, you know, for anybody who might just want some support or something. But, you know, Garrett's, is it certified recovery coach?
Yeah. I'm a recovery coach through CAR, which is, well, it's Connecticut Associate Recovery and something else. I can't remember exactly the name. But it's a recovery program, which you five days of intense training and you learn how to help people get into recovery.
So when somebody comes to you then and says, I need some help, I need to start the recovery process, what are the initial things you you go over? Where do you start?
Basically just kind of figure out what they're wanting out of recovery. And really trying to see where they need to be put, I guess. It's kind of like a placement. And then contact the proper recovery people. And then basically I'm kind of like the middleman in a way. But so I kind of took it a step further with my Facebook group and try to help them there. So I don't really have a permanent spot for being a recovery coach. Some places actually... they're not actually a paid employee thing right now, but they're trying to in the state of Wisconsin to further that and make it a paid position in rehabilitation centers. So they think it's a need. So well, let's take a shot at it and see what happens and, you know, help where I can.
Well, that's I think something you could probably help anybody anywhere just with what you're doing right now with web meetings and camera webcams. And, you know, we all get the, you know, I think Dr. Phil recommended personality coaches or behavioral coaches, whatever he called them. But as a recovery coach, you know, I would think a lot of people could come to you and say, can we talk virtually? And, you know, there'd probably be a lot of people willing to pay for services like that. You know,
it's a sensitive area because I'm not like a licensed person. You have to be like a psychologist, you have to be licensed and different things like that. So when I give out my expertise, it's not really, I guess you can't really say it's professional because I'm not licensed.
Right. You're not, I don't, you're not diagnosing.
Yeah.
Probably, I would think in your case, you're giving your background and what has worked for you and encouraging people to, you know, maybe try those steps, getting people the proper information, referring them to the right source, you know, right places. But I think that's all part of a coaching and mentoring.
I think I care too much though sometimes where I would probably go over, you know, like where I'm supposed to be at as the coaching level, because I care too much about people that, you know, want to get out of recovery and want to and make better for their life choices. So that's where that limit of my recovery coaching comes in. And I'm like, you know, I really want to help you, but I got to, you know, turn you to this person or whatever. Substance abuse counselors. So those are licensed people. So it's like, you know, people told me I should just take that next step. And I'm like, well, that's, you know, some more college and stuff like that. And I don't know if I really want to go to that extent, but I mean, they deal with a lot more than what I do. So basically where I'm at is kind of a good place. Because I can, you know, offer advice, I guess, you know, instead of actually telling them, you know, this is what you got
to
do.
Yeah. Like I said, it's going through possible scenarios to get help and kind of helping people along. What I think what a coach would do, you know, you're not diagnosing, but, you know, none of us have the, well, Bobby does.
What's a doctor of everything? Wait a minute now. What am I going to prescribe you? 30 pages of Moby Dick? Or, you know, read all of The Great Gatsby. Call me in the morning.
Why do I have a headache? Hey, Ryan, you got that medicine? No.
So, well, we're going on an hour here. So let's kind of wrap things up with maybe some numbers people can call Garrett for help.
Yeah, I got Eau Claire Sober Living right here.
We'll encourage people for now that I got the email address for us down below there, beyondyourhangover@gmail.com. You know, tell us your story. And if you're looking for help, you know, of course it can be found. If you need some help doing that, then you know, we can certainly help you. Or we just, of course, like the recommendation so much now, just Google it. Google yeah. local recovery center, local alcohol groups.
Right.
You know, there's probably something out there that will be appropriate for you. Maybe it won't be the first try. You know, so I know obviously some people have to go through several steps or try several times to find something that might click for them. But it's as you know, Garrett, it's probably more worth it than not once you get the help you need.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not only just financially, I mean, in your mental health and your body and everything else. Well, thank you.
Okay, Dr. Bobby, Garrett, I'm Ryan Peterson. And there's the email address down below.
All right, beyondyourhangover.com.
We'll do it again next week.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.